I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio. I kind of went into the Batman thing that his name is John Anilio. And you're listening to the Functional Nerds, episode number 220. Dun, dun, dun. I'm Batman.
And it's Patrick Hester. He's an author.
I'm Batman.
Author, a blogger, a podcast, this dude, and he's Batman.
I'm Batman.
And you can check out his website, batman.com.
One of my favorite things is how it should have ended Guardians of the Galaxy. Because they end up in the Super Cafe with Superman and Batman, and Groot's going, I am Groot. I'm Batman. I am Groot. I'm Batman.
Not to get off the subject too much, but did you see the Lego movie, Patrick?
I have not yet seen the Lego movie. It's a travesty, right?
Oh, just because of the Batman, Will Arnett doing Batman. It's totally worth it. It's totally
well,
worth
I just,
it.
I love
and
there's
a great...
I love the How It Should End guy doing Batman. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I feel like he's conveniently dodging.
You, one who is part bat and part man, who is your father?
Oh, I'm not part bat. I just dress like a bat.
Why do you dress like a bat?
To strike fear in the hearts of my enemies, duh.
Bats are not scary. Bats are tiny mammals.
Bats are totally scary.
You should be called normal man who dresses as bat.
I'm not just a normal man. I'm Batman.
I am Groot.
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 I'm Batman.
This could go on for a while.
I'm Batman.
I am Groot.
I'm Batman.
It's always good. It's always good. But you can check out Patrick's website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb.
You know that scene in Man of Steel where you have to kill Zod? Yeah? That wouldn't happen to me. You know why? Because you're Batman. I'm Batman.
My name is John Anilio, and you can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And... three-time guest today, Brian McClellan. He's becoming one of our favorites, and you can check out his website, brianmcclellan.com. He's the author of the Powder Mage Trilogy, which includes The Promise of Blood and The Crimson Campaign, and Book 3, The Autumn Republic, which is due out in February. He's also got a bunch of novellas and short stories that are in the same universe that you can check out. And Brian, thank you. Oh, and his Twitter handle is at Brian T. McClellan. Brian, thanks for coming on today.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I followed Brian McClellan for a little while on Twitter. That was just weird. So I had to find the T.
I think a few people have done that. It's fun to watch, especially when there's somebody that I follow and then I see them tweeting at a Brian McClellan.
There's a journalist / like sportscaster kind of guy named Patrick Hester who followed me on Facebook. He sent me a message. He's like, I have to follow you because we have the same name and we both write. And I'm like, okay, whatever.
I saw, for some reason I ended up, someone tweeted something from John Scalzi the other day, and I ended up kind of looking through Scalzi's, who he was following, and I found that he's following another guy named John Scalzi, who I don't know what he does, but clearly not the same John Scalzi, but that is very Scalzi-esque to follow another Scalzi that has, like, 30 followers or something like that, and that just kind of cracked me up. I don't know, but I imagine there are a lot of Brian McClellans out there, but yeah, Brian, thanks for coming on the show. I loved Brian's first book, Promise of Blood, and I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the books in the trilogy, including The Crimson Campaign and The Autumn Republic, which I have an e-arc of already, so I'm psyched about that too. I actually went, you're one of the reasons why I actually hounded Orbit, because Orbit they put their stuff up on NetGalley, but they don't put everything up on NetGalley, like sort of the public version of NetGalley, and we had Sarah, how do you pronounce Sarah's last name, Patrick? Is it Chorn or Shorn or?
Chorn.
Chorn. Okay, so we had Sarah Chorn, who Bookworm Blues is one of the most prolific book reviewers out there.
She read over 200 books. Over 200 books in 2014.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah. And writes great reviews too. Like doesn't skimp on the reviews. But when we had her on the show, she was mentioning some of these Orbit books that she had, and I'm like, I'm approved for Orbit through NECA. And she's like, well, do you get the email? I'm like, what email are you talking about? She's like, the email where they send you the link. I'm like, I don't have that email. She's like, I'll send you the person to email. And I'm like, can you please send me this? And that's how I have Brian's book, because I annoyed the person at Orbit too. I'm like, I want all the Orbit ERs too.
Was like, that okay. Ellen?
It was Ellen. Yes, it was Ellen who I sent it.
You just have to email Ellen. She is the best publicist in the world.
She was super nice. Yeah, I'm exaggerating my annoying of her, but I'm just like, we have Orbit authors on all the time, and I really want to read their stuff. If you could say, she's like, yeah, calm down. I'll send you the link. No big deal. Okay, but anyway, so we're excited to have Brian back on the show this week, and Brian's a busy guy. You know, he's an active fella on Twitter, and in addition to the trilogy, as I mentioned, he has how many. Like novellas and short stories and stuff, do you have in that universe now?
I want to say it's 7 I'm up to.
Well, you know, it's a lot when you have to think about it for a minute.
Yes, it's 7.
Like, yeah. So I think that's fantastic. I think it's really, you know, I've been reading a lot of Chuck Wendig's blogs and such recently. And, you know, he was just talking about how we live in this great time where, you know, if you're a fan of somebody, those authors can just keep putting out other, you know, sort of materials that sort of keep you in that world in between the books. And you're someone who's really walking the walk with that, really doing that. So I applaud you for that. And I think it's wonderful. So congrats.
It's actually a lot of fun to do it, like kind of fill in the edges of, you know, kind of my universe, and give people, you know, a little deeper glimpse into things. And, you know, it's also nice that it gives me a, you know, extra income of self-published income that's, you know, coming in every, you know, month, you know, rather than mm-hmm. the, you know, sporadic checks you get when you're a full-time author. So yeah, it's great, kind of a thing that I do for both myself and for fans. And it's, mm-hmm. It's quite enjoyable as well.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Well, let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Brian, I know you're prepared, so what is your pick this week?
Okay, so my pick this week is a video game, actually. It's a computer game. I've actually talked about it on Twitter a bit. It was my hardcore addiction during about from Thanksgiving to Christmas. It's called This War of Mine. And it's an indie game you can find on Steam that it's been getting a lot of rave reviews. It's really incredible. It's you basically play the part. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a side scroller style game.
I love those. Up, down, down, left, right, BA, start.
And but you play the part of a group of civilians that are trying to survive in a shelled out house in the middle of a civil war in Eastern Europe. And you have to go scavenging and you have to get medicine. And it's actually really kind of stressful the first few times you play, because your people like die in horrible ways. And you kind of eventually, if you can kind of get over that first, like, holy crap, this is a really depressing game. It's really, really impressive. It's well done. It's well written. And it's cool to figure out how to get your people to survive and, you know, basically reach the end of the war. I put way too many hours into it over the course of about 5 weeks. Beat it probably 10 or 15 times, but it's quite enjoyable.
Cool. Very good. Very good. Patrick, do you have your pick this week?
I do, but at the same time, in my head, I'm hearing Kirby Crackle going up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start.
I love that song. It's such a good song.
So yeah.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start. I'm trying to unlock your heart from years of walls. And when Hyrule falls, I'm hoping that the things I do are working to connect with you. I see that you're free, quit my shop. I'd like for you to know my name. They call me Box 138. I think we are due for a walk. Cause like me, you pull from the middle, skip the books.
I found a cool thing this week, and well, actually, a couple weeks ago. Maker versus Marker.
Ooh, okay,
so
what is this?
There's this whole genre, I want to say, on YouTube of videos. And the first one I found that was just ridiculously awesome was Maker versus Marker. And it's this video where this person is they're drawing on a whiteboard. And it's their hand versus a Goku Dragon Ball Z-like character fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their hand. So it's like their hand, it's stop motion. So like their hand is like a giant snake and it's kicking him and hitting him and then running across the screen and the character is reacting and they're doing like Street Fighter / Dragon Ball Z moves. And it's very neat. And then there's Maker versus Marker 2, which just amps everything up and makes it even more epic. And then I found out there's all of these different ones out there by different people where essentially it's stop motion animation on either computer screens or dry erase boards or that kind of stuff. But it all started with Maker versus Marker as far as I'm concerned because that's the first one I saw. But it's really, really cool. Really, really cool. You should go check it out.
I will. That sounds great. My pick this week is going to be a documentary. It is on Netflix right now, so if you have Netflix, you can watch it for free up there. And it is The History of the Eagles. I don't believe I picked this yet.
Oh, I love that.
And it's called History of the Eagles. Yeah, Story of an American Bag. I am not even a big Eagles fan. I'm fine with the Eagles. I like some tunes. I was in a cover band in college where the singer loved the Eagles. So I played like two or three Eagles songs. So I was always okay with them. You know, I didn't dislike them, but you know, I was never a big fan. And it's a great documentary.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. And it's really good. And it made me really kind of like the Eagles a lot more. I went and I, you know, I use Spotify. So all the Eagles albums are up on Spotify. Yep. So after I watched that, I just made a big Eagles playlist and didn't realize so much about the band. Like, didn't know that Glenn Frey and Don they were in Linda Ronstadt's Ronstadt's backing band, and after they did that for a while, they're like, well, we just want to write songs together. And Linda Ronstadt was cool and actually helped them a lot because she covered Desperado
and
really kind of gave
it a hit.
Yeah, and you just, you know, I knew some of it, you know, some of their history and like how they were tied in with Jackson Brown and and I always thought it was the other way around. Eyes. And they tell a good story about how Glenn Frey like lived above Jackson Brown, and he heard him writing that song and wanted to kill him because he was writing it for like he was banging away at the piano writing it. And, it's really cool. And then just I always thought it was the other way around with Take It Easy. I thought it was Glenn Frey and Jackson Brown wrote one line, and it's the reverse. It's Take It Easy, one of the Eagles' biggest hits, is actually Jackson Brown's song that Glenn Frey wrote one line of. He wrote, but Jackson Brown was so appreciative of that line that Glenn Frey gets half of the writing credit on that song. He wrote the "It's a Girl, My Lord" in a flatbed Ford slowing down to take a look
at me.
And Jackson Brown just thought, besides finishing the song, he just thought it encapsulated the whole feeling of the song so well that now look, I'm sure Jackson Brown gets a lot of money for that song over the years. I'm sure Jackson Brown is a millionaire many times over because of the Eagles recording of that song. So I'm sure it's that. But it's a great doc. You see the whole history. You see them when they do their comeback in the 90s. And again, I wasn't a big fan, and I kind of became a little bit of a fan after watching it. So
one of my favorite parts of that entire documentary, and I'm going to warn people right now that I'm about to cuss. One of my favorite parts is when they cut to Glenn Frey and he's sitting on the stool and he's looking at the camera and he goes, "Fucking Felder."
I know. Yeah, he really did not like Don Felder.
Oh,
like,
he hated him.
I grew to like Glenn Frey a lot after watching that because he's like such a straight shooter. He just like was like, yeah, well, that's what we did. And he's nice and he's funny and he's laughing, but there are a couple more points where he's just like, you were driving in a car. And we had cocaine in the front seat, and the guy turned, and we were doing 90, and the guy was like, "Life in the fast lane, man. Life in the fast lane." He's like, "That's a good song." Like, he's just telling all these stories.
I also loved, you know, and Felder knew I was going to come after him, and he went off stage before I could get to him, and he walked over, and we had all these guitars, you know, he had all of his little section of guitars, all of his favorite guitars, and he was wearing guitar, and he walked up, and he put his good guitar down, and he grabbed the cheapest fucking guitar in his collection. He grabbed that one and smashed it and ran.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. Yeah, it's a lot of drama. It's great. So if you have Netflix, I highly recommend it.
Actually, I have it on my DVR because I caught it on cable one night before it went to Netflix. So I actually have it on my DVR.
Cool. Yeah, it's there. So check it out.
Brian
That's very
is bored.
Good. So cool. Yeah, so let's get on to some more exciting.
No, actually, the documentary sounds really cool. I'm going to have to look it up.
It is so good. Yeah. So good.
It's definitely worth watching. Okay, so what we're going to talk about today is something that I think is quite relevant and something I'm sure Patrick and I talked about on an earlier show many moons ago, but we haven't talked about it specifically, and that is self-promotion. It's something that is quite relevant and it kind of has come up over the past couple of weeks on various author blogs. And I just read a piece that Sam Sykes wrote about it, which I thought was very good. And, you know, I think if you're any kind of creator, it's kind of on you to promote yourself a little bit, but how do you do that without being weird and being jerky and turning people off? And it's a very tough balance. Some people are awesome at it, and I will talk about some of the people that I think are awesome about it. Some people aren't as great about it, and I won't mention any of those people's names because I actually like a lot of those people, but they're not great. Like, I just don't care for the way they promote their stuff. So, Brian, this is obviously on your mind. So what are your thoughts about it?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's something I think about a lot, you know, doing the whole full-time author thing, because, you know, you're always kind of worried about, you know, selling the next book and moving forward with your career. Because it's not just kind of a matter of pride of, oh, I'm selling more books because I don't really have any other discernible skills. So I need to sell books to pay my rent. And it's, I kind of take a little bit of a mercenary stance on it. I feel like as an author, it's part of your job to self-promote and that you need to do it. There's a lot of people that kind of shy away from it and maybe think that it's not classy or whatever. And I disagree strongly. However, I do think that you need to do it in a way that's not unappealing, that's not turning people off. There's kind of a balance you have to strike between telling people that something is out there and...
Something is out there.
You know, being annoyed, being annoying to all the people that follow you on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. One of the biggest things I noticed after Promise of Blood came out was that it was almost as hard to just let people know that my book existed as it was to get them to read it. And so... being able to say, you know, like when my short stories come out, I sometimes just kind of have to spam Twitter for, you know, maybe once a day or twice a day for the next, you know, week or two, because Twitter moves quickly. You know, people follow lots of, you know, different, you know, Twitter accounts, and so it's going to move down on their feed. And I want all the people that care about something new of mine coming out to be able to see it. So I'll kind of keep using it until I don't get a response back from people, you know, until I stop getting favorites or, you know, comments from people saying, oh, great, I'm glad I saw that, and you know, stuff like that. And then I'll just kind of let it die. It's a weird kind of balance you have to strike as an author because you don't want to be unappealing, but you also need to let people know that you've written something and that you've got new work out there. I feel strongly about people sometimes get uppity about, you know, oh, you're spamming Twitter, your stuff like that. It's my Twitter. I can kind of do what I want with it. And if somebody doesn't like that, they are welcome to unfollow me. I think the line kind of is drawn where you're tweeting at people, you know, you're grabbing their attention specifically and saying stuff like,
tagging,
oh, buy my book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tagging people. And that's kind of where I draw the line. Well, I'm a big proponent of self-promotion, but that's just getting to literally be spam.
Well, there's lots of avenues for marketing. Obviously, longtime listeners know that I am a marketing person. That's what I do. When you look at something like Twitter, if you are a real person and you're tweeting real things, and then you tell me that you have a short story out, and then you're tweeting real things, and you're talking about your life, and you're complaining about the line at Starbucks, and then you tell me that you've got a book out, and then you're tweeting about your cat and how your cat is annoying you, and your dog pooped on your carpet, and your three-year-old did this, and hey, I've now got a new car, and then I've got a short story out. That is all real and legitimate, and it works. And most people don't have a problem with that. It's the people who create Twitter accounts that all it is, hey, I've got a new blah link. Hey, I've got a new blah link. Hey, I've got a new blah link. Mm-hmm. And then they do what you're talking about. Hey, blah, blah, blah. I've got a new blah. And they start tagging people. Yeah. Right? That is really annoying.
I actually think it's interesting. Because when you get to the really big authors, it actually suddenly swings around to where some of these authors, they literally only have Twitter or Facebook to let people know that something new is out.
Yes.
And it suddenly swings to being acceptable because everybody realizes this person's, you know, a number one New York Times bestseller. They have no interest or time to upkeep their Twitter account. And so the only people that follow them or bother following them are the ones that do want to know when their next thing's coming out.
And I think there's a difference, though. I think there's a difference. So if you're a new author and you have, you know, you're trying to build some buzz and you're trying to get people to pay attention to you, and let's say you just got an agent, the first thing your agent's going to tell you is, are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? Are you blogging? Because they want you to get out there talking, right? And then as soon as you sell that book to a publisher, the publisher's going to go, oh, are you on Twitter? Are you on Facebook? Do you have a blog? Right? Because they want you to have those things out there and be out there. If you're Stephen King, the publisher's not going to go to Stephen King and say, do you have a Twitter account?
Yep.
Yeah, Patrick, I really agree with what you said about – I think that is the best – if you're real, it's fine. Like, and it's a person that I use as an example all the time. I'll use Chuck Wendig as an example. Chuck tweets a lot. Chuck tweets a lot about a lot of different things. He tweets a lot of silly stuff. He tells you about his kid. He tells you just
– beat up.
You
know,
yeah, ridiculous, absurd things. And Chuck's super funny and writes lots of funny. And I've talked about Chuck a million times. And he's a good friend of the show, and we all love Chuck. But he's a great example of someone who tweets a ton, tweets when he has books out and things out too. I don't mind it one bit. One bit I don't mind it because he's always entertaining with it too. And he'll even sometimes tweet a lot of, like when he has a new thing out, I'll see him tweet it several times throughout the day. And it's fine. Because it's real, and you know what? Like, I like Chuck a lot, and he doesn't do it constantly. It's not just like, buy my books on Amazon. It's mixed in with a lot of other stuff. So he's a really good example. I think Delilah Dawson does a very good job of that, of tweeting a lot, but tweeting a lot about what she's into, her kids, her family, and when she has stuff, she tweets about it. And I think Brian does a good job with it. Like, so I think that is kind of the key, is being real, and it's fine. And you know what? I'm sure all those people, I'm sure Chuck gets a lot of like, you tweet about your books too much. And you know what? you're not going to please everybody. But for me, I think it's fine. It is the people that just do their Amazon book. What I hate is sort of the unreality, as kind of Patrick mentioned. This is the one I hate the most. And I have people that I like who do this. I hate this one. This is the one people that, well, other people may not be annoyed by this, but this is what I get annoyed. This one, which is like, did you hear what people were saying about this book, my book?
Right.
Like, and then it's just like that I hate that one. That one drives me crazy because it just seems so false. I don't know. I don't now. The inverse of that, which I think is totally fine, is when someone writes a good review of your book and you retweet it, and then or even if you put the, wow, someone, you know, this person, Sarah Chorn, wrote a really, like, I'm flattered that she liked my book, and here's the that's great, perfectly fine. And that accomplishes the same thing where you're just tweeting out some, that's cool. But did you hear, it's too marketing. It's too much, like, you're not a real person then.
So I think it also, a lot of times, it depends on how you set it up in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that I know who are authors, not necessarily in genre fiction, who they have set it all up to be very quote-unquote professional. So, you know, that's all it is. And you realize when you go there, that's all it is. So, for example, there's an author that I met at Pikes Peak Writers in April last year who writes these I don't even think they're genre. They're just like mysteries kind of thing. But they're like thrillers. They think that's the term, thrillers. So the thrillers are set up in such a way, and she basically sets up that everything she does is just pushing those. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you meet her, she puts you on her email list, and you get these very professional emails from her that are talking about, you know, news today about blah, blah, blah writer. And, you know, it's very newsy kind of things and very little personal stuff, but you get it right away. That's just the way she set it up. Right?
Yeah.
Now, not too long ago, I got, I received these emails from this guy, and he is self-published. And I don't say that as a bad thing. I'm just letting you know that he is self-published. So he's doing it all himself.
Yeah.
And he's doing it all poorly. And I finally said, look, this is really poorly done. I sent him an email and I said, your email, you're trying to make it sound like it's a personal message from you to me, and you're failing miserably at it because it's too corporate speaky. Right. So he's got a mailing list. He's put me on his mailing list. He starts sending these emails out, and it's just very well done, very badly done. And so I replied and I said, look, these, you know, I got a problem with this, and like the email was formatted poorly. It had multiple formats on the text. Mm-hmm. It had different font sizes, different fonts. I mean, it was really, really bad. And I'm going, dude, this is really, really bad. This is not helping your cause. And ended up on like a 3-day back and forth Facebook exchange where, instead of saying, okay, I'm sorry that you don't like this, or maybe I do have some, it's more of, well, you said that it's not any good, but you didn't tell me what I should be doing.
Oh, gosh.
What should I be doing? What do you think is the right thing? It's like, dude, I'm a marketing guy. If you want that information, I'll send you my rates.
Mm-hmm.
Which then turned into all these blog posts.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm not named.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Very passive aggressive.
Off air, you have to tell me who that is.
Yeah.
You have to tell me who that is. Off air. Off air.
So actually, I think that maybe we should talk about self-published people and self-promotion, because there is kind of maybe even a double standard, but I try to be gentle about it, because like you were saying, you know, somebody like that, they're doing it themselves completely. With both, you know, newsletters, you know, social media, all that stuff. And I, you know, it's easy to give flack to people that are self-published, when you're sitting high and mighty as a traditionally published author or whatever. But I think it's, should be remembered that they don't have, a publicist that can coach them. You know, they don't have, you know, an editor that will send them a gentle email saying, hey, I saw that you said something kind of stupid on Twitter the other day. Maybe tone it down a bit. You know, they don't have that benefit.
Sure.
And that's more valuable than you might think. And so I do think that oftentimes self-published authors tend to be very gung-ho. And they're often the ones that you see doing the spamming that we talked about earlier that gets overbearing and pretty irritating. And I think that's part of the problem, is that they don't have anybody to kind of tell them, you know, what's cool and what's not to do. That's unfortunate, but I just think that it doesn't mean that self-published authors can't do self-promotion, because I think that they should, and I know they do, it's that maybe they should stop and think about it before hitting enter a little bit more than, you know, a traditionally published author might.
Right. Well, there are self-published authors who are doing it absolutely right, and they're doing it well, and mm-hmm. and I admire what they're doing, because again, they are doing it all themselves. And,
yeah.
And there's no real blueprint. There's no real guide. It's you have to figure out what works for you, right? Mm-hmm. So then they've done that. And then yes, there are self-published authors who are trying everything, and it feels very haphazard. And it's all over the place, and you never know. Mm-hmm. I get it. You don't know if what you're going to try is going to work. Is the newsletter going to work? Is my Twitter going to work? Is the Facebook going to work? Should I be using Google Chat? Should I be using Google Plus? You know, should I have a blog like this? Should I do it on WordPress? Should I blah, 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 blah? There's all these questions that you have to ask yourself. And right now there is no real good blueprint. I'm sure there's tons of books out there telling you how to do it and how it worked for this person or that person, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you.
Mm-hmm. I think if I could pass on any advice just from sort of being in this community for a long time and doing the podcast and booking people for the show, I think it goes back to what we said earlier. Be human, be real, and treat people like as if you were just wanting to be, you know, friendly or friends with a person, because, you know, there are some publicists that I know and work with, and they say, hey, can we get this person on the show? And so some of the booking of the show is through publicists. A lot of it is not. A lot of it is me asking people on the show. A lot of it is other people asking, authors asking if they could be on the show. And if I don't know you at all and you're just out of the blue asking, I don't know. I'm not going to – like, I just don't – I'm not comfortable doing that. I don't want to book somebody out of the blue because I don't know what you're going to be like on the show. So it's – you know, and look, we have this podcast. It goes out to some people. It's something. It's not the biggest thing in the world. So I don't view it as like, oh, we're high – we're not. Certainly not. But – like, don't ask anybody, like, don't ask someone for a favor that you don't know. Like, mm-hmm. you would never do that in real life. You're not going to ask somebody, hey, I'm moving this weekend, can you help me move my couch? If you don't know them, who do you ask? You would ask your friends. You ask. So I'm not saying, like, just try to suck up or anything, but give it time. Like, mm-hmm. follow people on Twitter. Follow them on Facebook. Talk like a human. Don't the first thing you do is be like, I got this book, or I got this thing.
Yeah, you know, meet them at conventions and stuff like that. Right after I signed, I went to a convention and my editor was there, and she introduced me to Chuck Wendig, who I had been following for, I don't know, 6 months at that point, I think. And she introduced me to Chuck, and we got to chatting, and it was fun. And he invited me to do one of his, I think at that point it was like the 10 questions blog posts on his on Terrible Minds. And that was one of my first like entries into, oh, there are places that I can go and, you know, self-promote if I'm a pleasant person, you know, kind of thing, because he got to meet me and, you know, he seemed to like me enough to invite me on his show, or on his
platform.
Blog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do think it's, there's a lot of fear among authors. I think even big authors, that saying something about your new books coming out and whatnot, is gonna turn people off to you. And you know, I know that there are authors that, you know, they track who unfollows them on Twitter. And you have to have this balance of, don't be afraid of saying something. Don't be afraid of self-promoting yourself. But also be self-aware, you know when you're sounding like an idiot, and know when, you know, you may have gone over the line, or when you're tweeting too much, you know, things like that. So just kind of try to walk that balancing beam.
Agreed. All right, well, that seems like a nice place to wrap up there then. So Brian's got his new book coming out, The Autumn Republic. That is coming out in a couple of weeks from the time that this airs. So if you haven't read Brian's other books in the series, go and check those out, A Promise of Blood and The Crimson Campaign. Those are both out right now as we speak, so go and check those out, as well as all of his various novellas and short stories and things. So go and check those out as well. Brian, where do you have in terms of appearances? I know you have a book launch coming up. What do you have with that and cons and things like that?
Let's see. So I've got in actually a week from this weekend, I'm going to be at Confusion, but that will be passed by the time this airs. So if you saw me at Confusion in Detroit, then hi again. and then I'll have, if anybody's local to Cleveland, I'll be doing a book launch party for Autumn Republic in on Valentine's Day, February 14th, at the Barnes & Noble in Mentor. After that, I've got a couple of library appearances in Ohio. You can check my website for those. I'll probably be at Gen Con this year, and maybe Phoenix Comic Con, but kind of the big cons are up in the air still, so I'm not 100% sure.
Excellent, excellent. And you can check out his website, Brian McClellan. .com and Brian T. McClellan on Twitter. For Patrick and I, we are going to be at Capricorn in Chicago, also that same weekend of the Valentine's Day. So Patrick and I will be there for a few days, and we're going to be doing a live podcast, and we'll be on a couple panels, both together and separately.
You're cheating Matt, on me?
You know, we're open.
On Valentine's Day?
Lots of cool
the
folks
truth
are going to
comes out.
Yeah, lots of cool folks will be there. Matt Forbeck will be there. Margaret Weiss will be there. Mary Robinette Koala is going to be there. Just a really nice lineup, and us. We're like the JV, but we'll take it. We'll
like,
be there.
It's like, huh? We have two slots.
Yeah,
we kind of already got all the good people.
Yeah, well, you know what? Our appearance, as I think we mentioned on a previous show, was Patrick and I were sort of complaining that we don't get asked to go to cons together. Like, we've gotten asked separately. And John and I-C-K-E-S, I don't know if it's Ikes or Icks or Ikes or Ickes. We should probably learn how to pronounce his name. He actually listens to the show, and he books that con. And he was like, he invited us, and we're like, oh, yes, we will be there. So, it's mostly food-based, really, why we're going.
Cannoli, Italian beef sandwiches, deep dish pizza.
So that's our big draw to go there as well. So, you know, we're going to eat our way through Chicago while we're there. But yeah, so if you're in the area or not in the area, if you're just looking for cons to go to, I think it's going to be a great time. We're really looking forward to it. So check it out. Patrick, anything else you want to tell people about this weekend?
Usual stuff. Go check out my reviews at Kirkus, my podcast over at SF Signal. It's won an award or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And atfmb.com. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook at atfmb.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Have a great week. Brian, best of luck with the book launch, and we will see you all soon.
I'm Batman.
I am Groot.
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 I'm Batman.
This could go on for a while.
I'm Batman.
I am Groot.
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 I'm Batman.
In the hiccups.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.